This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and guests about politics. It's Thursday, March 18th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker.
First of all, the idea that Joe Biden said come, because I heard the other day that they're coming because they know I'm a nice guy and I won't do
they're
what
Trump
did.
They're saying this.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. They're not. The adults are being sent back, number one. That's number one. Now, number two, what do you do with an unaccompanied child that comes to the border? Do you repeat what Trump did? Do you repeat what Trump did? Take them from their mothers, move them away, hold them in cells, etc.? We're not doing that.
This week, in an interview with George Stephanopoulos on ABC News, President Biden struggled to address his first major policy crisis and one of the most difficult issues facing the country, what to do about migrants at the southern border. Trump's controversial zero-tolerance policy and the resulting images of migrant children being wrenched from their parents' arms were defining moments of his administration. On Biden's first day in office, he proposed an 8-year path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants and a plan for an orderly resettlement of refugees. He also issued executive orders halting construction of the border wall and strengthening the DACA policy for undocumented immigrants brought to this country as children. But in the first week of March alone, almost 5,000 people tried to cross the U.S.-Mexico border every day, more than 500 of them unaccompanied children. Over 4,200 migrant children are currently being held in custody, and the process to deal with them has fallen into chaos. Jonathan Blitzer, a New Yorker staff writer, joins me to discuss the surge in border crossings and Biden's options for addressing the migrants' plight. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Dorothy. Good to be here.
You know, all of the recent presidential administrations have struggled with immigration policy, particularly when faced with an influx of migrants. This just seems to happen periodically in waves. But the current numbers at the southwest border are likely to be the highest in two decades. What are the causes? Help us untangle this.
Well, as you say, I mean, this is a crisis that dogs one administration after the next. And I will say, too, that right now, you're mentioning the future projections for how things will look by the end of the year. And it's true that those numbers are staggering. But in comparison to what we saw in 2019 under Trump, the numbers still are not nearly as high. Which is just to say that, sure, I mean, we can parse out the extent to which this is a crisis, and to some degrees it very clearly is, but the broader context is that we've seen this before, we knew this was coming. Right now, what particularly complicates the situation is you have, to begin with, the continued exodus of families and asylum seekers from Central America. This has been a problem for a decade. It's not abated. It's only gotten worse. You now have added to that problem the pandemic, which has devastated just not just from a public health standpoint, but from an economic standpoint, the reality on the ground in some of these countries in Central America. You have the wreckage wrought by 4 years of Trump, which we can also lay out very specifically. I mean, you had Remain in Mexico, which put 70,000 asylum seekers stuck in northern Mexico, blocking them from entering the country. You had another 20,000 people who were blocked through a policy known as metering. You had, over the last year, a policy in which the Trump administration expelled over 200,000 asylum seekers, using as a pretext the public health crisis related to the pandemic. And so you're seeing a buildup of longstanding pressure, the wreckage that's come off of the Trump years, the buildup of all of this sense of need and desperation in northern Mexico, and all of it's leavened by, you know, the pandemic. The government's ability to handle incoming migrants right now is obviously restricted by how they handle the influx of people during a pandemic, how you test people, how you keep people at a safe distance in congregate settings. So it's really a perfect storm. And we knew it was coming, and here it is.
Biden's been criticized for failing to see it coming. And we just heard there is now the very widespread perception that he actively encouraged migrants to come. That's certainly what many migrants believe. So what happened?
I mean, it's an interesting question because I've been watching the press and certainly politicians on the Hill describe this as a kind of a Biden border surge, which, you know, drives me insane, frankly, because I think really if there is a crisis that we should be understanding in a broader sense, it's the fact that our system is so addled and is so badly designed for a problem that we know exists, namely an asylum crisis in which you know, huge numbers of Central American families come to the U.S. seeking refuge that we cannot provide them. That even when you have an administration that knows what's coming, the tools themselves that the U.S. government has at its disposal are so limited that there's still not that much that can be done in anticipation. I do think that the Biden administration can be clearer about all that it is doing. I mean, I think for the most part, the Biden response has been, you know, more or less by the book, given what the options are. I mean, they're addressing middle and longer term approaches, all of which are important. In the short term, it's very messy and very ugly. And I think the pandemic particularly slowed down the Biden administration. You know, the first thing that happened was the Department of Health and Human Services has 13,000 beds at its disposal to help house unaccompanied immigrant children at the border. Until very recently, until a matter of days ago, the Biden administration couldn't use all of that bed space because they were only willing to fill up that bed space to 60% capacity due to the pandemic. So that immediately created a bottleneck and a problem. And so the administration scrambled to set up these emergency facilities. Again, under the circumstances, we would rather have children be held in emergency facilities run by the Department of Health and Human Services than we would having them get stuck in borderland detention facilities run by Customs and Border Protection. But even so, the numbers are so big and the dimensions of the problem are so complex that we're already seeing a buildup of the number of kids who are still being held by DHS. And that's obviously a source of concern.
And that does take us back to the very thing that Biden swore he wouldn't do, which is, you know, put these kids in these horrible facilities. It just feels like we're reliving history in the worst possible way.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, there are particular things that concern me about Biden's approach that I think it's important for us to keep an eye on. But on the whole, I'm not sure what other options Biden has. I mean, he has only bad options. And, you know, I spoke to people on the Biden transition, and I've since spoken to people at the White House, and they knew all this was coming, and they knew that the options were bad. And they also knew that the political firestorm was coming. And that's a real problem, too, in all of this. We're going to deal with this problem again and again and again. This problem is not going anywhere. We've neglected all of the realities in the region that we've had a hand in for decades. And all of the consequences of that are announcing themselves at the southern border, and they do periodically. I mean, 2014, 2019, now they'll continue. But I think, you know, one of the questions that I ask myself is, will there ever be enough political cover for an administration to weather the short-term mess of it all, to try to set a broader solution in motion? And I do think, to the extent that it's possible, the Biden administration is trying. I don't know whether it will succeed, but I do think that there are notable differences in how the Biden administration is handling the situation as compared to Trump.
What about Title 42? That's a sort of obscure-seeming order which Biden, as I understand it, has left in place. What does that entail?
I mean, that's crucial to the whole complexion of the border. So Title 42 was put in place by the Trump administration at the very start of the pandemic. And basically what it was a public health authorization that came from the Centers for Disease Control saying, we are going to expel any asylum seekers from the southern border because we are dealing with a situation involving serious disease, and we have to keep the border closed to asylum seekers just as a public health matter. Now, that was extremely controversial at the time. Scientists at the CDC resisted that order. I mean, they pointed out the obvious. Well, wait a second. Tens of thousands of people every single day are crossing the border. They're just not called asylum seekers. From a scientific standpoint, there was never really that much value or utility to that public health authorization. But the administration used it. And so the Biden administration has this problem because on the one hand, they know that the Trump administration put this authorization into effect in bad faith. On the other, if they remove this, this is one of the few tools the Biden administration thinks it has to try to control the flow at the border. I mean, what we've seen so far is that the Biden administration has kept the majority of this authorization in place, and it's only created an allowance or an exception in one category, and that is for unaccompanied immigrant children. And look what we've already seen with the unaccompanied children. You see a huge surge in the numbers. It causes all this political backlash. It's a headache for the administration to deal with at the border. And so you're really seeing the Biden administration try to eke out this middle ground. And it's painful to watch.
So I want to ask you a really basic question, which is, how are so many children managing to get to the border and then crossing alone? I understand that many are adolescents and teenagers, but they also include really small kids. And I was struck by something you recently wrote about three Honduran siblings. I think they were 3, 7, and 9, who were, until really recently, just stuck in limbo at the border. Could you tell us their story?
The story of those three Honduran children was that they were stuck in northern Mexico. They had arrived there during the Trump administration in the winter of 2020. And their mother unexpectedly died while they were stuck in northern Mexico. And suddenly these kids were orphaned. They were in a foreign city. They're all what's called, what the government calls, tender age children. I mean, they're you know, all of them younger than 10. At the time in northern Mexico, they were taken in by effectively Good Samaritans. Eventually, advocates were informed of what was happening. And as people on the U.S. side of the border tried to coordinate with advocates in Mexico, what eventually happened was two nuns accompanied these children to the border at a port of entry. There was so much confusion at the time as to what would even happen to them, because still children were being turned away under Title 42. And so, you know, the big fear was that these kids would just get shunted off. And there are all kinds of dangers in northern Mexico: smugglers, criminal networks, extortionists of every sort. And through really dogged advocacy, a bunch of lawyers were able to get them through, get them into the care of ORR, and now they're in California. But the question that's raised by these three children is, you know, effectively, where are all these kids coming from? And I actually think it's pretty murky. I think a good share of the children that we're seeing right now trying to cross alone are children who have been stuck in northern Mexico in various sorts of limbo with or without their families over the last year because of this variety of Trump policies that effectively closed the border to them. You also do have continued numbers of children coming alone, fleeing the region alone. That's a trend we've seen for more than a decade. It will continue. Those numbers tend to pick up also this time of year for you know, reasons related to the seasons. The fact of a change of administration always gives people the sense that, okay, now there might be a renewed opportunity for us to actually get through. So it's actually hard to tell. And the other day I asked a White House official, you know, do you guys have some sense of the proportion of children who are new arrivals, who have just recently set off from their homes in Central America versus the share who have been there stuck in some form of limbo? And they don't know. No one quite knows. It's a real tangle.
And in the meantime, predictably, this has become, you know, a major political issue. It seems like it's basically the first time the Republican Party has been able to get together and concertively attack this administration. So we saw it this week when House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy went to the border and held a very Trumpist press conference suggesting that Biden's immigration policy might be making the U.S. vulnerable to terrorist attacks, you know, shedding crocodile tears about the children and everything else. How politically vulnerable, though, are the Democrats on this issue, particularly as we begin to look forward to midterm elections in Arizona and Texas?
This is the big question, and I don't know myself how it will play out. I mean, I think you're right that the Republican strategy is coalescing around, surprise, surprise, immigration as their rallying cry for the 2022 midterms. And I think given Biden's overall popularity, it makes sense for them to bring the attack to him on that particular front, because it's just sort of the straight ahead, obvious, politically cliche at this point. What I hope the Democrats will do is essentially call the Republicans bluff. Democrats are not good at this. They get nervous. There's all kinds of factionalism inside the Democratic caucus on immigration issues. You know, the concern among progressive Democrats is, you know, that Biden really needs to embrace asylum, that he needs to end Title 42 in its entirety, that he has to do everything he can to allow families seeking asylum at the border to be admitted and to be given a chance in immigration court. You move toward the middle of the Democratic caucus, and you see the more conventional concerns. Moderate Democrats worried that the perception of instability or insecurity at the border is going to hurt Biden and the Democrats writ large in 2022. You know, all I can say is I just hope there's some sense that the Republicans are playing this up. They're inflating the stakes of the crisis. The numbers were, again, worse under Trump. And now the government has 10 times more to contend with than the Trump administration did back in 2019.
And it just, it feels, sorry to interrupt, John, but it just feels as though the Biden administration is not sort of making that clear.
That's a really good point. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to someone at the White House the other day about just this. It seemed to me that during the early days of these stories really starting to dominate the news about children getting stuck at the border being kind of overwhelmed, overrun, it did seem like the Biden administration was sort of not engaging. I think that was a mistake. I think they are engaging. This is just sort of anecdotal, but I do feel like they're responding a little bit more pointedly now. I think the way they see it is there's no way for them to win on this issue. We're going to get attacked from the right regardless of what we do, regardless of what the situation is at the border. And the left's always going to be divided about how to be humane and tough at the same time. And I think on the whole, their approach is to keep restating what their values and priorities are. So you have this slightly awkward reality right now of the Biden administration talking in sweeping terms about the need to address root causes of migration and thinking, I think, fairly creatively about trying to address issues of political corruption and violence in Central America and so on. And yet they're saying those things in response to images from the border. So there is a little bit of this disjunct, and I think it's incumbent on the Biden administration to really make clear that we are restoring a sense of law and humanity at the border. We're not overwhelmed. These are problems we expected. We're dealing with them. And to kind of turn the table on the Republicans a little bit, you know, for example, the other day, while Kevin McCarthy's at the border doing his grandstanding, the governor of Texas is actively refusing the aid of FEMA to test migrants showing up at the border for COVID and to help, you know, the government provide various services to house them during the pandemic. You know, Abbott's refusing that federal aid because he wants the situation to get worse so that the Republicans can attack Biden on this front. And so, you know, it's ugly, this kind of political brawling. The Democrats are terrible at it. But I hope they're willing to fight because the alternatives are bad. I mean, if Biden starts to drift toward a kind of more conventional hardline approach, I think that that will be truly depressing and really upsetting. And I haven't yet seen signs of it. The Title 42 stuff is the thing to watch in that regard because it shows you kind of this middle road that he's trying to eke out.
Yeah, there are, I think, two, correct me if I'm wrong, immigration bills before Congress right now. First of all, tell us what they are and whether they have any chance of success.
There are a few bills in the mix. The bills that are coming to a vote in the House this week are the DREAM Act, which would create a path to citizenship for DACA recipients and DREAMers. And would also provide a path to citizenship for many holders of what's called temporary protected status, which is a kind of legal status that allows immigrants who've been here for years to work legally, but it's something well short of actual citizenship. So the DREAM Act would formalize those protections and basically give a path to citizenship to about 3 million people. There is also a bill in the mix that would open up further legal pathways to bring farm workers to the U.S. to work here legally. All of these are welcome developments. I think both of these bills have a very strong chance of passing the House. Whether they pass the Senate is much less clear. I don't think they have a great chance in the Senate.
And by the way, it's worth saying that Republicans once supported these kinds of bills.
I mean, to give you a sense of where things are now, the Republicans are using the current crisis at the border to whip votes against these bills in the House. And then when you move to the Senate, you know, all of the Republicans who once championed some form of immigration reform, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, that group, look at them now. I mean, they're now the first people to assail Biden for everything under the sun. You know, the general view on these issues in Congress is that because the politics are so intractable and so divisive, you need to break up big ambitious bills into component parts. The problem is now there's such obstructionism from Republicans that even these more calibrated, pointed immigration bills that have different forms, like bills targeting the DREAMers and so on, there isn't even really the support for those. And one thing the Biden administration has done when it sent its sort of wish list to Congress in the form of Biden's big comprehensive immigration reform bill One of the most notable things about that bill, I would say, from a political standpoint, was that the Biden administration did not bother engaging in the usual trade that Democrats do on immigration with Republicans, which is in exchange for a path to citizenship for millions of people living in the U.S. without papers, we are going to increase all kinds of enforcement measures in the interior and at the border. That's always been the playbook for Democrats. The Biden administration is not going down that path. I think they've learned from the Obama years that there's no point in trying to engage with Republicans on this because the Republicans are going to obstruct everything anyway. And yet, the border situation plays into the exact opposite dynamic. I mean, the Republicans now are going to play up the fact of insecurity at the border, and they're going to use that to sink every other immigration bill in the mix. I mean, a lot of these immigration measures, this DREAM Act, doesn't address anything related to the border specifically. That's not what that bill is about. But that will not stop Republicans from using the situation at the border to say, well, look, how can we legalize more people at a time when the Democrats aren't doing anything to secure the border? I mean, it's the same old story. It's brutal to watch.
So, but overall, it sounds like what you're saying is that Biden's pretty much on the right track, but you know, given the impossible situation he's dealing with, but he needs to fix the messaging and get on the offensive and not succumb to these predictable attacks by McCarthy and others.
Yeah, and I think you know, from a technical standpoint, here's what I think the Biden administration is anticipating. You know, these numbers are not going to get better by any stretch. I mean, this is a crisis that's been going on for a decade. It only gets worse. But one of the things that started to happen at the southern border is that the Department of Health and Human Services, which had restricted its bed space because of COVID, is now using all of its bed space. And I think their expectation is as HHS starts to get humming in terms of its resources and figuring out where to house children, that the images at the border will start to seem less dramatic, that it will give the Biden administration a little bit more maneuvering room, that this is flaring up now as expected. They have to kind of get through these early weeks and months. And if they can, then at least the noise can be brought to a low enough decibel for them to try to engage more constructively in Congress. But it's true. It's not enough for them to leave the politics to the Republicans. I mean, I really think, you know, the Biden administration has to engage, and I think congressional Democrats have to engage and get on the same page. And I've not yet seen that.
Thanks so much, John. Clarifying as always.
Thanks.
Jonathan Blitzer, a staff writer at The New Yorker, is currently at work on a book about immigration and Central America. This has been The Political Scene. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program was produced by Alex Barron and Kylie Warner for newyorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.